I'm from Durham Region Health Department, which is just a little bit east of Toronto, Ontario. And yes, like maybe I'll move it up a little bit. Thank you very much. Is that better? Okay. I'll project as well. Okay, so without further ado, I'll just get started. Today I'm talking about effective versus popular, an analysis of local alcohol policies and prevention initiatives. And what has happened in Ontario is we've had some changes with mandates to public health, and that left our direction a bit fuzzy, to say the least. And public health units were looking to say, what should we be doing locally? What is effective for us to be embarking on that's going to have an impact on drinking rates, decreased injury, and chronic disease? There really wasn't much to do, so we decided to put together this project and see if we can come up with the answer. So before I go into too much detail, I'll go through some of the things that I just need to address, which is I have no relationships to disclose. And I'd also like to acknowledge those who worked on this project. So we had a research and writing team that was four public health units who worked together very closely on this. And also we had key informants who were really important to the project. And my co-applicant for this particular presentation today is one of our key informants, and that is Dr. Norman D. Giesbrick, who is here today. He is a senior scientist emeritus, Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto, a well-renowned expert in the field, and I appreciate his support. Moving on. So we did have four public health units who did the research and writing, but we were supported by a number of health units. They signed on to say that they found value in what we were doing, and that helped us to secure funding through Public Health Ontario. And so we had a total of 12 health units backing us on this project in some way, shape, or form. And in Ontario, we have 36 public health units, so that was about a third that we had working on this together. Okay, so probably not anything new to everybody in this room, but when we look at alcohol, we know that globally it is the fifth leading contributor to disease and disability, and higher than tobacco in some countries. Ideally, local, regional, national, and international efforts should be complementary, and central to all efforts is the use of sound local policies. So as I mentioned, we embarked on a project, and we started with two project objectives. The first was to describe a comprehensive public health approach to decrease alcohol consumption at an at-risk level and alcohol-related harms at the local level. The second was to identify the barriers and facilitators that Ontario public health units face and in addressing alcohol locally. This led us to two research questions for this project. What evidence-based interventions can Ontario Boards of Health implement to decrease alcohol consumption and alcohol-related harms in Ontario? And what evidence-based strategies can be coordinated at a provincial level to support collective action to address alcohol consumption and alcohol-related harms. For our project, we identified four data collection methods that would be employed throughout the project. So the first one was a systematic literature review, and our initial attack at that created 7,000 articles in the search results. We refined that down through a number of steps to get down to 18 systematic reviews on alcohol prevention. And 16 of these were rated as strong using the Health Evidence Quality Assessment Tool, and two were rated as moderate. We did recognize that there would be some limitations with our systematic literature review. There was a good likelihood that all of our MESH terms did not actually capture everything about alcohol that we might need to know. Probably missed something. So in order to compensate for this, we also looked at other manual citations and gray literature to help to supplement and validate our systematic review findings. Oh, I will go back first and explain. Also, I mentioned already our key informants, but it's probably important to note that we had 9 key informants in total. 6 of them were from the area of alcohol, and 3 of them were from the area of tobacco. In Ontario, we've had tremendous success with tobacco and provincial strategies that have come to fruition because of local action by public health units, and we thought it would be important for us to start looking at those experts and what they had experienced and anything they would recommend we might consider as we start to navigate the same road. And then the Ontario Public Health Unit Survey, we had an 89% response rate to our public health units. We surveyed them to try and find out what they're currently doing what their barriers are, and what their facilitators are for success. So now taking us into the results, when we looked at the survey results for the Ontario Public Health Units, we found that public health is very involved in education and persuasion activities, as well as modifying the drinking environment with training for servers and owner-operators. Drinking and driving is also part of the work that's being carried out. Yet when we looked at other effective policy interventions, such as the regulation of physical availability, restrictions on marketing, as well as pricing and taxation, public health professionals believe that this is important, but they're not doing anything about it, or very little about it. So that created the paradox that we were looking at, thinking this is where we have the most effective policy interventions being least often used, and the least effective interventions being most frequently used. So as we move forward, it became apparent to us that we needed to ensure that we met our goal of identifying barriers and facilitators for local work, and also identify some evidence-based local actions that would contribute towards the effective policy interventions identified in the evidence. When we looked to the evidence, we were really looking to identify effective strategies that can translate to local action. Many effective policy options sit under the jurisdiction of provincial or federal level regulation. But that being said, through the evidence, we were able to find some local interventions that were concrete, promising practices that public health units could employ. And also both the survey and the key informant interviews highlighted some of the barriers that helped us to move forward as well. Some of the things like political apathy, pushback from the alcohol industry, pressure from the industry to increase sales and revenue. This is a slide that I would just like to draw your attention to. It does have a lot of detail, but very important, I think. So this slide looks at the work of Baber et al. As well as Anderson et al. And while the two use two different scoring systems for their work, the chart illustrates the top-ranking evidence-based policy dimensions. It also clearly shows that education and awareness raising strategies are the least effective policy dimension. And as you remember from what I said, our public health units were doing that the most. And when we asked them what they thought they needed to do more of, it was education and awareness raising. So this didn't really, they weren't really addressing the most effective interventions, which is cited here as regulating the physical availability, drinking and driving countermeasures, treatment and early intervention, pricing and taxation. Also probably worth noting, which isn't on the slide, is work that has been done some years ago by Professor Robert Room, and he looked at effective policies and the contrast between popular and effective. So after our work, and after we completed a narrative synthesis review and analysis of the three different data sources, we came up with 13 practice recommendations that we're suggesting public health units look into for their local action. We always give a misnomer that we want them to assess their community first and apply that filter as to whether it meets their needs or not. So these are very high-level recommendations. They come directly from our research findings, and the recommendations have been organized by the policy areas outlined by Baber in the resource Alcohol No Ordinary Commodity, so many of you will probably recognize them. For the sake of time today, I have included the policy area as well as the high-level recommendation, but it's important to note that in the guide itself, each of the 13 recommendations has subsections that are outlined with specific examples of actions that public health units can do, and we've also organized it through the social ecological model. So that's the framework we've referenced it in. I have executive summaries that have the specific details. They're at the back if you wish to have them. And just a little plug, sorry, thank you very much. This is the report. This report is available online. There are bookmarks at the back that have the URL and web link. And if someone was really keen and wanted one and didn't want to print it out, you can contact me. I have my information at the end, and I will send you one. Okay, so not to belabor the point, when we look at pricing and taxation, we ask public health units to consider educating the public and policy makers and to identify and implement local pricing strategies. For physical availability, we ask them to prevent further expansion of alcohol sales, which at this time we had no idea how that would be, but in Ontario right now we're facing a bit of political decisions that are going against our work in this area. So we have a lot of work ahead. Also, to influence policy development, outlet density, and hours of alcohol sales. When we look to marketing and advertising, we ask public health units to empower youth to advocate against alcohol marketing and advertising, to also explore effective counter-marketing approaches to alcohol advertising and marketing, And with modifying the drinking environment, we asked them to create an alcohol report illustrating local consumption, availability, and alcohol-related harms. That particular option was quite prevalent in the literature, as well as a key message from our key informants, and work with businesses and stakeholders to modify the drinking environment. When we look at drinking and driving countermeasures, we asked public health units to incorporate local surveillance data on alcohol-related harms in the community report, and to support law enforcement to continue to enforce laws and regulations around drinking and driving. Education and awareness, we acknowledge that education and awareness strategies are part of a balanced and comprehensive approach and must be implemented accordingly, not to be done in isolation. Treatment and early intervention, to build capacity of healthcare professionals to implement early intervention and screening into practice, and to implement early intervention strategies as part of an overall strategy to reduce alcohol-related harms. I recognize these two look very similar when you look at the more streamlined activities in the executive summary. You'll see how they differ. The one is 12 is healthcare professionals, 13 is what public health units can do with SBIR and early intervention strategies. As noted, we wanted to identify barriers and facilitators that public health units are facing, and we were able to do that through our survey. We noted that some barriers were, not surprising, resources and competing priorities, insufficient evidence of effective local interventions, which we were excited to see because it validated the reason for our project, political apathy and lack of political will, absence of a coordinated provincial alcohol strategy, because in Ontario we do not have one. And then facilitators were provincial government supports, partnerships, enhanced staff capacity, organizational and political support. When we looked at challenges, restrictions on advocacy within government funding is a challenge within Ontario because we have funding that is received from the Ministry of Health units for our public health units. But in Ontario, we also have public health departments. I'm from a department, and that means that I'm regionally governed, and so my employer is regional government, and often there's a conflict of interest for us to be political. Centralized top-down alcohol management, so alcohol pricing is centrally controlled, electronic media is typically not local, and limited leeway on setting local ceiling on density of outlets. Also, this has been mentioned a couple times throughout the day, I've heard local businesses and special events rely on alcohol sales, numerous social events, fundraising festivals. That can be really hard social norm to change and to try and go against. It's certainly not a popular thing to do. So in conclusion, there is a gap between what is found in empirical studies to be effective policy interventions and what is found to be popular policy interventions. The gap is not unique to local communities. Other surveys have shown that in Ontario, the most popular policies are the least effective. And there needs to be considerable efforts devoted to showing the benefits of effective policies at all levels, local, provincial, and national. So next steps, because we have to do something about this. So we talk about what steps might be taken to close the gap between popular interventions and effective interventions. We are already starting to facilitate regular communication across public health units on alcohol issues so that exemplary initiatives provide a model for others to consider. Also to engage NGOs, including chronic disease, injury, and trauma charities, to take up alcohol as an issue worthy of attention and resource allocation. Key message from this was we can't do it alone and we need to get better at how we partner. Public health is always great at how we partner, but on this one, we can do better. Involve authentic voices, so those victimized by harm to others from alcohol in campaigns for effective local controls. So, as I mentioned, there are resources at the back. Please help yourself. And if you need something else, just feel free to contact me. Thank you so much for your attention.
Super. So a couple of questions. Yes.
I'm curious about your approach and why there wasn't any involvement of the community themselves.
That's a really good question, and one that was absolutely at our planning table, because we were saying, of course, you can't plan for the community, you have to plan with the community. But because we had just switched from a mandatory guideline issued by the Ministry of Health to Ontario Public Health Standards, and where we used to have a health promotion branch within the ministry that was taken away, we recognized that at first point we have to figure out what is our role, and we have to reinvent ourselves in public health related to this topic, because we are only doing harm reduction, we were only doing drinking and driving, it was very downstream. So we needed to reinvent ourselves and get ourselves organized in order to position ourselves to get out there and work with the community. And that's the impetus for the community report. There's a lot more detail in the guide, but the community report is that exact step of now get out there. Get out there and find out who's interested in alcohol, find out what the issues are, and find out what they have as the solutions, and just be the facilitators of that change.
Yep. That's really.
Yes, but again, this was just to get ourselves organized because we have accountability agreements to the ministry, and so we had to figure out how do we keep that, how do we have consistency among the 36 public health units, and then how do we get out in a unified voice.
There's a question in the
yep.
back.
Our drinking age is 19.
Oh.
But yes, we were looking at decreasing rates of drinking among, like, legal drinking age over the age of 19. That was the target in just the broad objective. But we also looked at youth drinking and what preventative measures could we employ. Yep.
It's a
great question. Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
It was for us.
Yep. So there was two things that you've said that I just want to touch on, if that's okay. So the first one was that particular objective comes right from a ministry requirement that we have from the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care, who requires us to ensure that a percentage of the population does not exceed the lowest alcohol drinking guidelines. And so that is our benchmark that we're being held to right now. And so that was tied into our objective. So very government related. The second was, I think our guide probably illustrates it well to say, don't paint health education or education awareness strategies all with the same brush. So a one-time education event where that is the end of it is what we're talking about is not effective. A communication message that does not lead you anywhere is, again, just to raise awareness, is never going to change behavior. It will perhaps change attitudes and knowledge. And if you're using education as a start to the policy roadmap, that is the ideal use of education. Because, as you say, it's getting somewhere. It's leading somewhere.
Thank you.
Yep.
Oh. Sure, one more and then.
How do you get people or co-health practitioners to move from, I know everybody wants
yeah, we all do that really well.
You've got to raise awareness, right?
Yep.
Or maybe even certain behaviors that are not so difficult to change or have some low risk, but this is a complex one. So how do we move sort of the system away from education only to actually get deeper into these other policies that are harder to implement and, like you said, more resources? How do we do that shift? How do we push that sort of communication campaign?
That's a really good question. We didn't know it at the time, but when we embarked on this project and we had the 12 health units sitting at the table, that was our best strength to getting momentum across the province to happen, because we had one-third of the health units sitting there. So like the gentleman in the front row said about, did you get the community involved? We were trying to get ourselves involved. So what we did is, instead of one public health unit leading this, we pulled as many as we could. We invited as many as we could to the table, because having them do this journey with us and learning as we went, it just naturally happened. People started to reflect and go, yeah, this isn't right. We've got to change this. And so with having a third at the table already recognizing this has to change, it was a lot easier to take it out to the other health units and start to bring them on. It is not perfect. I won't say it is. But we've seen a lot of momentum in public health to kind of get on the same page, so to speak, in the last year just because of the work that this has done. I think that if you're not able to do something like that, simply connecting and using the community development lens with public health and recognizing that's a community and we need to get back to some shared goals and objectives and what is evidence-based and what are the effective practices, and let go of what's comfortable and safe.